The thing is, when you're close, the movement is slow. Knowing where that tipping point is.
Hi, and welcome to episode 233 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
It's looking for a microphone.
Just had to move it to show you the random post-it notes.
Today we have, we're going to talk about determination, persistence, giving up. We don't know what we're going to call it, but I have a story to share, which I'm a little bit obsessed with. And then we're going to just talk about that and see where it leads us. Yeah. But before we do that, tell us what you've been up to, because you've had a more interesting time than I have in the last few days. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, I had a whole week away and it was lovely. So I had 2 days going to an event, a kind of business-based event with other people, but obviously it turned into a lot more than that. And then I had a day with friends walking somewhere beautiful in between. And then I had Manchester Art Fair. So it's the third time I have been there. It's a lovely venue. And it's always exhausting. What can I say? It's tiring. It's fantastic. It's great to see the work. It's exciting when things sell. It's draining when they don't. You wonder if it's worth it. And then you rebook for the next year, which I'm not entirely sure that I'm going to stick with yet for various reasons. But yeah, I've been doing that. And it was interesting. I mean, they're always different. And I think this is the thing about art fairs. There is no such thing as consistency. Like, even with the same fair, it's different. It's a different time of year. Like, everybody's in a different state. They're never the same. And I always leave an art fair thinking, oh, it would have been better if XYZ random thing had happened, or it wouldn't have been as good had this thing that happened not happened. Like, oh, it was only good because this one thing made it. But there's always that thing,
isn't it? Because that's like saying, well, it was only good because the good thing happened. Well, yeah the good thing happened, so yeah.
And I just noticed that almost always happens. You always think, okay, well, it was good, but only because of XYZ that got it over this sort of mental good line.
Yeah. Was it busy? Given the economic crisis that we're in, did you notice a difference in attendance?
Well, I think there were a couple of things that changed. So the first year I did it was the first year post-COVID. So they had, it was 21 and they had timed slots and it was consistently busy throughout the day. And I thought, this is really nice, because there are other art fairs that I've been to where you get a lunchtime lull or it goes a bit quiet and it was consistently busy. Last year they had no time slots and it was so busy at points people couldn't move. It was not fun. And I think you actually lost out, because if somebody had gone all the way around and they actually wanted to come back and see you, they probably went, oh, but I can't.
Can't through the crowd.
So this year, was it as busy? I don't know, because I don't know the footfall numbers, but they had widened the aisles, so it was more spacious. But yeah, it was consistently busy.
That's good. Because the year I went was that first year, and it was too crowded even then at points. It was like difficult. By the time I left, which was around lunchtime, it was difficult to maneuver. Nowhere to get anything to eat, because everyone was queuing up at the one place. It was a bit much, but some people don't mind that, I know, but I like to be able to wander around and look properly at everything. But the only reason I didn't attend and have a look, because I knew lots of people there and some of the people visiting, so I would have loved to come, but I just can't face the traffic. It's like, I can't face Manchester driving anymore. And there's no trains to get to. I can get to Leeds, to London easier than I can get to Manchester from me.
Interesting.
So anyway, that's my excuse. But glad it was good. And it seems like people enjoyed it. Some of my community members went and met each other. And some of my community members were exhibiting and then they saw each other. And then people said, I tried to get to Alice, but she was always busy. So people who wanted to come and say hello, listen to you on Art Juice. But
yes,
couldn't talk.
There were lots. So if that was you, hello. There were a lot of, you don't know me, but I listened to Art Juice. But, you know, one of the nice things for me was, I think, you know, unexpectedly I sold, and it was good because it's sort of what I took. I did have small paintings too, but I sold a lot of big work. And what's sort of quite nice is that those sold to people who don't know me, who don't follow me online, who haven't seen me, and they walk past and they make that decision. And that's quite reassuring.
And it's nice that you sold big ones to save on all the packing, shipping issues. And then you only have to ship little ones.
Yes.
So that's perfect.
Yes, yes. And some other nice connections rekindled. So let's wait to see. There will be some nice projects, I think, unfolding as a result of connections and conversations made. So all in all, good. And a very slow drive home, avoiding a 5-car burn up on the motorway. So I had to stop and have 3 donuts, which I thought, I'll buy 3. I will never eat 3. 10 minutes later, all gone.
I think donuts are like, if you were given a plate of broccoli and chicken, you'd eat to the point, a certain point, and then say, right, I've had enough now. But I think with donuts, if you gave me, I avoid them like the plague, because I don't think there's a stopping point. I mean, there must be. Presumably at some point I would vomit. But scientifically though, that's because, did you know, we were not evolved to digest fat and sugar together. Fat and sugar do not occur together in any natural product. So this is the theory. That's why we can't.
That's why it's so addictive, isn't it?
Yeah, because we haven't got the trigger in our brain to say enough. Mm. So anyway.
Whereas a plate of chips, apparently, could you stop that much easier, because it's just the fat and not the sugar? Or do you get the sugar from the potatoes? But then
I don't know if you put the salt on. Yeah, presumably. No, but yeah, I don't know, actually. Yeah, but no, but yeah, but I'm done, like Little Britain. I don't know.
Right, on
the
from
limit
donuts.
Of my scientific diet knowledge. That was it. That's all I knew. I can't say anymore.
So what about your week?
Bit of painting, bit of exploratory painting that's been fun. Lot of course teaching, because I'm still on with that. So there's a couple of weeks to go. So it's been a bit of a bitty week, but I'm glad I'm back painting again. I'm glad I'm back in the studio doing something. And do you know what happened though? I thought, right, I'm going to be really organized. I'm going to start a new set of work. I'm going to go tidy the whole studio. I'm going to move anything I'm not working on out. I'm going to get 10 panels because I've got some stored somewhere else. I'm going to get them out. I'm going to gesso them all at the same time. I'm going to have a complete, and then I'm going to get out the tools and the colours and the everything laid out that I want, and try and see if I'm more productive and efficient and creative when I don't have to think about. So I went in to start doing that, did about 10 minutes of tidying, and then thought, oh, I know what I could do on that painting that's on the wall, and then started working on 2 paintings. And so I'm still going to do this big tidy up and sort out. I feel like I need a complete reset. But I think at that point, I just needed to play with some paint. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
That's it really for the week.
Yeah. I like having a tidy up. It lasts about 10 minutes, but I do quite like doing it occasionally.
So the other thing that happened in my week is what's going to lead us into our main topic. So shall I tell you about that? Yeah. Now, this is something that people listening to this podcast might not know about me, but I am really interested in, and have always been interested in, medieval history. Don't worry, I'm not going to start giving you a lecture about medieval history. But one of the fascinations I've had since being about 16 is Richard III and the princes in the Tower. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who's not listening in the UK, Richard III was king in about 1470 something for only a couple of years. And he supposedly murdered the 2 heirs to the throne who would have threatened his reign, and supposedly buried them in the Tower of London.
Who were children.
They were little, 12 and 9, I think. And Shakespeare wrote a play about him where he has a hunchback and he's evil and he walks about in all dressed in black, threatening to kill babies. But I always thought it's interesting because there's only one or two portraits of Richard III, and he looks so kind in them. And he just doesn't look to me like a person. Now, people in those days did things that we wouldn't do now, and life was brutal. Being in royalty or even aristocracy in those days was like being in the mafia or among drug dealers.
Gangs.
You just wouldn't want to be there, because you put one foot wrong and you're dead.
Yeah, medieval gang life.
Yeah, so anyway, it's been a fascination of mine. And I remember when I was in my 20s thinking, I'm going to research this. I'm going to research this and I'm going to find proof. And I'm going to prove. And I even went off to the library a few times and got some medieval books out. And then I went, yeah, you know, got interested in something else, forgot about it. But there is a woman called Philippa Langley, who also amateur, interested, but no historical experience whatsoever, had the same thought and actually went off and did do all the research and kept plugging away. And at a certain point in her research, she realized, this was quite a few years ago now, she realized that she knew where he was buried. She thought she knew where he was buried, but all the historians, almost all men, said, no, he was thrown off a bridge into the river. He wasn't buried. And she said, I think he was buried. And I think he was buried in this particular grounds of this house. And she tried to work out where that house was. And she was in, it was in Leicester. She kept traveling from London, where she lived, up to Leicester to do all this investigating. And one day she was walking. Somebody had said to her, if that sacred ground existed, it wouldn't have been built on in the 17 and 1800s. They would have left it. So look for a park or a car park or something. And she went into this car park in the area she was looking at, and she said she knew, she could feel it. She just knew that's where he was buried. And imagine that woman's intuition, right? So she goes to the kind of men who will do this kind of digging and says,
can I dig up your car park?
Will you do this with me? Will you fund it? Will you? And they say, what, based on a whim? But she gets around it by telling them, well, there's this priory underneath here, and it will be an amazing find for you. And she gets the university to fund a lot of this. Plus, she crowdsources some of the funding, I think. And she is determined that this body is there. And they're meanwhile just thinking they want to dig up this priory. When they start to dig, she says, will you start here, please? In this spot where she had the experience. And they go, no, we're starting over here. She argues again, right? They dig where she says, they find a body. They say, that's not Richard III. That's just some random monk. And they go off again. And she just keeps insisting until they test the DNA on the body and find out that it is Richard III, exactly where she had the experience. Of course, then Leicester University swept in, took all the credit, and tried to push her off to the sideline. The reason this came up again for me is that she's just published a book where she crowdfunded and crowdsourced a global investigation into the murder of the princes in the Tower. And she got average people all over Europe to go hunt in archives to find if they could find evidence that they weren't murdered. And she found a bunch of stuff which, depending on what you believe, either proves that they weren't dead, they were actually in Europe being looked after, or doesn't prove that, if you think maybe it proves that somebody was pretending they were alive. But certainly documents are there saying, I am Richard, Duke of York, and I am leading an expedition to take back the throne, kind of thing. She found them in Holland, she found them in Germany, she found them in France, or other people did. My point was, this woman is amazing, because all the way through, and still she is being laughed at, called a loony. People say she's in love with a man who's been dead for 500 years. She's just doing this because she's got a crush on Richard III. The kind of sexist crap that women get has all been thrown at her. And she just is dogged. Like, nope, I am researching. I'm doing proper historical research, which none of you have done. And then I'm going to share it. And, you know, and so not only did she find Richard III, but she possibly proved that something British historians have believed for hundreds of years is not true. Possibly, mm-hmm. I'm saying. But even if she's wrong, what got me about it is, because we both teach artists and we both come up against people who say, oh, this is too hard. I can't do this. It's too hard. Those people are not even facing an army of powerful men telling you can't do something and a complete lack of money to do what you want to do. They're just facing the drawing I did didn't work out, or the exhibition I did didn't sell as well as I hoped, or whatever it is. And I was thinking, what is it that gives you that persistence and that determination to continue? I mean, do you have to be a little bit mad? Maybe she is a bit potty.
Well, she probably is, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I mean, maybe that's a good thing.
And potty is probably a better word to use than mad or crazy or anything else like that.
Hysterical.
Which it's all complicated.
She's been a hysterical woman. She's been a, yeah.
Yeah, but what we're talking about is determination. It's doing something maybe against the odds. And I always come back to, you have to know what your reasons are for doing it. And that has to end up being stronger than all the potential obstacles. And obstacles are just things that you have to figure out a way to sort out, get round, or just ignore.
Mm.
Like, then they're always going to be there. Is there anything? Has there been anything that you've done that's been worthwhile where it's all beautifully sort of laid out for you in a red carpet? Like, even things like traveling, you know, which is can be beautiful when you get there. And you've got to do all the organization and the planning, and you've got to get there, and you've got to stand in queues, and you've got to arrive somewhere that you don't know, or, you know, find your bearings, or, you know, be hungry because you can't find a place to eat, or have something that you need a pharmacy for and you have to go out of your way to, like, there's always stuff. And I think we have a concept of traveling or being on holiday. Oh, this is being on holiday, it's worth it.
Mm.
And I just wonder that with art, somehow, with some of the things that we do, we just have a misfantasy, a miscomprehension that everything should be easy. Because otherwise, when it isn't, rather than going, oh my gosh, this is tricky, oh, wow, I'm going to have to stop, you just go, yeah, well, of course, and what are we going to do next?
Yeah, and I suppose that's the difference with her situation. She must have known, okay, finding and digging up a dead king is going to be quite difficult. Like, that's not going to be easy. Whereas, like you say, people have the misconception that for some reason with art, I don't know why. Because I don't think if someone said, maybe it's true. If you said, I'm going to learn the piano and it wasn't really easy, I suppose a lot of times you do give up that kind of thing. And I think it goes back to what you said a minute ago, where you said, knowing your reason why, and the reason why being stronger than the... So if my reason to want to learn piano is, I secretly just want to be good at it to impress people when they come to the house and I can play them something on the piano, that's not going to be a strong enough reason to sustain me when it gets difficult. So that is such a good point that I hadn't really put into those words before. What is your reason for doing it? Because there are all sorts of things that I would think are impossible for me with my art. And yet, looking at that, I think, no, they're not impossible. It's just, are you willing to do what's necessary or able? You know, sometimes life might be, I was going to say life might be in the way, but think about someone like Tracy Emin or Sean Scully, who have no personal life. That's not fair of Tracy Emin, and I'm sure Sean Scully's got friends, but they never had children, or in his case, he had children, but he just left them. Like, they made their art their life's work, and the other people around them, well, in Tracy's case, she didn't get married, and in Sean Scully's case, he just left his family to focus on the thing. That's a very stark example of that determination.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to go to that extremes, but I do think you have to be conscious of the choices you're making, and that it's okay to ease up and away from that. So, like, if the question is, how do we keep going when things feel impossible? Sometimes the answer is, you need to stop and rest.
Mm.
Like, if it truly feels impossible, you know, brain science way, there is no way that cognitively you can overwhelm that if you're dealing with the basics of bodily physical exhaustion, worrying about keeping safe, either physically or just things that are concerning you. Like, your priority has to be on taking care of yourself before you can do something that feels perhaps a little bit superfluous or if there is something that's more essential that comes first. So sometimes the answer is you have to pull back and ease up and take care of yourself, and there are other things that need your attention. But longer term, it's just knowing that there are going to be bumps in the road. And I always, like, I think of it of, you know, the old fashioned scales where you put the weights on. Oh my gosh, my granny had those measuring flour. And I used
I've
to love.
I've got one in my kitchen. It doesn't work, but I've got one.
Lovely. Because the thing is, when you're close, the movement is slow. Like you put the weights on for the pound of flour and it's bang down on one side. And then you start to pour the flour in and it slowly lifts up. And it slowly gets equilibrium and then it just tips over. And I think knowing where that tipping point is really interesting. And also knowing that there are things that you can put on and take off that will adjust what that tipping point is for you.
Mm.
So if we're thinking about, let's go back to the art fair example. Why am I doing an art fair? One side of the scale. I want to sell work. Boom. Big weight. Down. Right. I'm going to the art fair because I'm going to sell work. Great. That's winning. Then when you get to the art fair, you think, I'm exhausted. You put a weight on that, on the no side. Whoop. I haven't sold anything. Whoop. My hotel's crummy and I wish I was sleeping in my own bed. Whoop. All of a sudden, like, your scales are tipping back the other way and the reasons for not doing it are heavier. If you then, so you can do a number of things about some of those. You can think, could I stay in a different place next time? Take that weight off. Or you look at, like, what are your reasons for doing it? And it could be, if you're thinking about the selling work, you could think about doing it differently, but it could be, and about the connections, and about away from home, and about other artists that you're meeting and having conversations with that could lead to all sorts of other things. And you can rebalance your scale in all kinds of different ways.
Mm.
But that pivot point is often very slow. And it can be a tiniest thing that can adjust it to go from one thing to the other. And I think that's really helpful to bear in mind when something is feeling tricky and impossible, because there's always things you can adjust.
I love that sense in what you just said of it's up to you. Like, I was just having this conversation on a Q&A session in my course last night, and somebody had asked, I'm trying to remember what they asked, but Irene, who's coaches with me, said to them, It's when you realize these are choices, these thoughts you're having, that you can change. So the person was basically some version of, this isn't going well for me. The same problems arising that always arises for me. I'm getting frustrated. I can't do it because this is the problem. And she was just saying, when you realize that, you can step back from any of those thoughts and think, or there's another way of looking at this, or I can choose another reaction because I've done this one for 50 years and it's not been working brilliantly. And this is how I always react when something goes wrong. And maybe I could choose a different reaction. And what would that look like? And it's something that it's only in recent years that I've learned how much we can step back and look at what we're thinking and then choose another thing. Just what you've said, choose to rebalance it in a different way, or choose to just realize, oh, this is me doing that thing again. This is what I always do. I always give up at this point. What if I didn't give up and I just tried one thing differently?
And actually, that's why I think that these moments where it sort of feels impossible, or you get, like, really frustrated, or, like, they're a gift, actually, because you can't ignore that.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you could. I suppose you could ignore it and stay in that frustrated, annoyed, unhappy state. But who wants
you can,
to live you like can, that?
Bro? No, so you can either give up, or you can go, oh, well, I'll just do one last Hail Mary pass and see if this works. And then that's exactly the thing that pushes you forward. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, there's usually a knocking, but, like, when you get to that point of, oh, this is like the front where you let it out. Oh, I'm so fed up with this. It's not working. Okay. That's so loud then from you that you can't ignore it. And it often gives you a lot of clarity, because often in that, it's a bit like that in vino veritas thing, isn't it? When you're in that state and it's actually a little bit more emotionally heightened that you're cross or And another thing. I sent my husband a text message at one point over this weekend. I was walking back. I was lost. I'd been enjoying hanging the work. I got stuck on the wrong way of a 6-lane road. And I thought, there has to be a way to cross this road. There'll be a crossing or an underpass at some point. And I was walking off in the wrong, what I didn't know it was the wrong direction. I could see where I was getting to. But I literally just had to get over the road to the little bubble. I wasn't lost. I just couldn't get across this road. And I was walking in the wrong direction. And I was getting really annoyed because, like, my time to go back and get changed and put my feet up on the sofa before the private view was drip, drip, dripping away. And I was bumming off in the wrong direction. And I thought, okay, there has to be another way, and turned round and walked back almost to where I'd come from. And then I saw a way to get over the road. Now, I'd wasted a lot of time. I was livid at that point. I couldn't give up. Like, there was no choice. Like, I couldn't give up. I had
people
to get back eventually.
People but in Manchester are still talking about that woman who was walking down the road chuntering to herself.
Oh, probably. Yeah, but there was nobody walking. There was nobody to ask, you know. Ugh. And it is just interesting that I was like heading off in the wrong direction, and all it took, I had to turn around and go back the other way, and then found a way through it. But in that moment, I was really fed up. I said, I am not doing this again on my own.
Sometimes in those moments, you feel like there literally is no way across this road. Like, I have tried everything, and there's almost a nice feeling in telling yourself, no, this is just impossible. Then it's like, it's almost like a giving up in the wrong way that somehow can feel slightly satisfying. I can't quite find the words to describe it, but it's like having a little tantrum. It's like a 2-year-old's tantrum. It's like, right, well, this is just ridiculous then, and there's no point, blah, 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 blah. And then you have to find a way after that, because the only other alternative is to sit down and start crying in the middle of a strange.
I thought there must be a way, because I could imagine Manchester news headlines with kind of scattered bodies of people who had tried to like walk across and come over the central reservation. And I thought, this really can't be the way they operate. Like, don't spit your tea out.
I'm just thinking, I know it's strange up north, but surely they can cross roads.
Yeah, you know, the value of the paintings would go up. Artists found dead feeling carriageway, you know. Maybe the paintings would sell. I'm joking, but it was the point of frustration at which, okay, I'm really annoyed with this, then made me think, okay, and if you did want to do it again next year, what would make it easier? How would you enjoy it? What would you like to do? Do you want to have a smaller stand again and bring fewer work? Did you bring too much? But without that point of frustration, you don't start thinking about those things.
One of the other things that's striking me thinking about Philippa again versus the people who give up is it's partly knowing what you want. It's also partly this confidence in your own beliefs, which might veer into a little bit of lunacy at times. Like, maybe that is where we're a little bit deluded sometimes. But if you believe, I can sort this out, if I just keep going, if I just persist, I'll find a way. If you believe that, that's one thing. But for a lot of people I come across, I think that's what's lacking, is the belief in their own ability to do what you've been describing. Maybe because of conditioning in childhood, maybe because of life experiences, maybe, you know, perhaps they have a general lack of confidence in life in general. But then it's probably partly a sense of, well, if I give up now, I can't be disappointed with myself. I can't I don't have to find out that I can't do it. And that what is that personality difference? Because I definitely don't have that. I don't think of myself as a confident person in lots of ways. But when it comes to solving a problem and sorting things out, I quite trust myself that I'll figure it out. Sometimes wrongly, sometimes, you know, deludedly, but I think I can do it.
You know what I think part of it is? Because as you were talking, I was thinking, I don't have a belief that I can sort things out. But if I meet things that I think I can choose to drop things without a sense of self-judgment as much. And I think possibly that's what comes into it, is that we feel that if we don't sort it out, we take that on as I failed at something. Whereas actually, maybe you just decided it wasn't for you.
Yes.
It's not as important. Like
many things are not for us. Like I was never going to be the person who found Richard III under the car park because it wasn't for me. I gave up after a few times of reading books.
Yeah, and I'm never going to be Tracy Emin or Richard Scully because I don't want to commit myself that much to it. Like, yeah. I know what I want to commit myself to and what I've chosen not to, and that's fine.
Yeah,
but it's also taken a bit of time to get there. I think it does take it. Again, it's not immediate, the answer to a lot of those questions.
Even though you don't want to be Tracy Emin and Scully, I agree, I don't either. I do think there's a degree of selfishness that has, and it's where your selfishness comes in. So some of the students that I have haven't started the course yet, even though they signed up for it, even though they spent all this money, because, oh, my husband needed this, my son did this. One person said their husband needed them to do something and they felt wrong to be painting when he was battling with this project. And so there's on that, it's a spectrum, isn't it, on the scale. So on one side is Sean Scully off doing his own thing, leaving his family. I think not any of us probably want to be that. But on this side, there's I've sacrificed everything that I want for other people. And then somewhere on here is where we are and how far we're willing to push it along. Like there's a film of The Search for Richard III. It's really good. It's called The Lost King and it stars Steve Coogan and a British actress whose name I can't remember, but you'd recognize her. And in that you see, if it's true, it's a film, so it's a fictionalized version, but she keeps forgetting to pick up her kids from school because she's still in Leicester. And her husband, who's divorced from her, but he ends up going to get them and things. Like, she is quite single-minded, even though she is a relatively good mum when she's at home. She keeps getting distracted. And I know a lot of women have that thing of, oh, I'm not being a good mother if I'm not there for my kids 100% of the time. Or I'm not being a good wife if I'm not supporting my husband with all his problems. And that is something I think as women we have to overcome, that perhaps men don't, perhaps they do, because perhaps they have, you know,
I think they just have, there's just other, I think everybody has responsibilities and demands on their time. But I think knowing when you're in a particular loop and perhaps where some of those things have come from and making sure that you're expanding your, it's like your circle of experience, isn't it, really? So that you see other ways of doing it, because I think you have to see other people doing it before you perhaps you feel able to do something, certainly something that you've never experienced before. It's comforting when you see that there are other people doing it too. And then you get the choice. Do I want to step into that or am I going to stay here? Always.
And it's interesting how many times the people who are saying I couldn't possibly because I'm, you know, I have these responsibilities, not always for sure, but often the spouse or the family members, I've seen this over and over again, are thrilled to be asked to step up and help in most cases, mum. And I'm only saying that because most of my students are women. In most cases, it's mum or grandma, and helping grandma do what she wants to do. And oh, you want me to make dinner? Okay, I can do that. Because a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, the caretaker people are also the people who are constantly, oh, I'll just do it because I'm better at it than everyone else. So no, you sit down, I'll do it. It's too painful to watch your spouse try to make a meal or try to clean the house or whatever. Alice's face.
I'm pulling a face because my husband was asking how to like make literally the easiest meal. White fish, dollop of pesto, spread it on the top, breadcrumbs on the top in the oven. Like literally 30 seconds to describe, 2 minutes to put together in the oven. Oh my Lord, how many conversations have we had about this fish thing he's going to do for supper? He's like, I'm like, he said, oh, you're getting a bit annoyed. I'm like, it's literally the easiest.
At least he's trying, Alice.
It's not even a recipe. It's just things that you put in the oven. But yeah, in his head, he's like, I don't want to get it wrong. I'm not the chef. Yeah. So it goes back to, you know, actually it goes back to a bit of identity stuff, how you see yourself, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like what
and
you
if you're
going to
let go of, say you let go of being the best mum who's brought up now two generations, kids and grandchildren, and now you are the best mum and the best, you've also had a good career, you were great at that. You're going to give up both those things to try something that you might not be good at. And certainly at the beginning, you won't be good at. And you're going to suddenly not feel accomplished like you do in that area of life. You can see why people go, oh, actually, I'm going to go back over here where everyone thinks I'm fantastic.
Mm. And I think that the mindset change, and certainly for me as a mum, is that there are times where you thought, oh, well, I'm doing this thing that is taking me away from looking after the children. But actually what I see and what I see in other people is, you know, there was a lovely example. There was an artist at the fair this year, and I met her for the first time 2 years ago, where she came up and she wanted to be an artist, and she wasn't sure how, and she wasn't sure that she could do it. And it felt a bit like, I want to do this thing, but I've got two children, and her children are younger than mine. I was like, you've got plenty of time. You just need to take the first step. And she joined the membership, and to watch her create the work, take the stand, sell two pieces on opening night was amazing. And what was also amazing is the fact, the enjoyment of how her children's view of her has changed, to the extent that they now think she has a proper job and her husband does this thing that they don't really understand because they don't see him do it, but they see her doing her thing. That's part of being a really good mum.
I think it is.
It's like opening up your children's view of what's possible. And you can't necessarily predict how that's going to work. And I think that's the point about stepping into these spaces of things that feel impossible. Yeah, they feel different. They feel like you don't know what the answers are, but that's how you make progress, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yes.
I don't know another way.
Yes. And the question comes back to then, do you want to? Because sometimes, as you say, we get into something and then we go, actually, the amount of work this takes, I'm not interested enough in this. And I have people leave my membership on a fairly regular basis for that reason. They say, actually, painting isn't a big part of my life anymore, and I just don't have time for this. And that is good. You know, now go find something that does make you happy.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know about this, can it be that it is for like 5 years and you really work at it, and then it's something else? Maybe you move on to something else. Maybe it's not always your life's purpose to find the one thing, whatever it is that you love, and then work at it. But while ever it, I do think you owe it to yourself to find out, do I care enough, as you said right at the beginning, do I care about this enough to push through the difficult times? And if not, is there something else that I might care about that much that I could be doing and making it and being happier and making more of a contribution in and all of that?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we spend so much time in our life working on things or doing things that pass and fade. I mean, we're just talking about cooking. You know, you spend time cooking, you eat it and it's gone, and then the next day you've got to do it all over again. Right. Would you want to give up and just take a pill that kept you sustained? No, that's just part of what you do. Gardening, you know, sometimes I, you know, and there are people who spend their entire lives, careers, whatever, creating beautiful gardens. Even if you do the basics, you do the thing, you trim it, you rake, you cut the grass, like it all needs doing again. And we don't go, oh, do you know what? I'm just not going to bother doing that anymore. Because you still want the experience of the results of it. You get to choose how involved you want to be.
Yeah.
Like, do you need to go to a horticultural college and learn everything and be an expert on plants? Or do you enjoy going to the garden center and planting something and watching it grow and doing your best to keep things alive? Like, you get to choose the level. But we do, in all sorts of areas of our life, we spend time doing things that is wasted, that doesn't get results. Wiggly bunny ears, you know.
I think that's why cooking and gardening for me, I faded away. I gardened for quite a few years. I love making a new thing in the garden. I love organizing that, getting it done, and then maintaining it there. So I think I've had to, like, say, cooking out the window, really. I don't spend much time on that. Gardening, get someone to cut, trim things back and cut the grass, but it's not for me anymore, because I want to spend my time doing this thing. So that's another point, isn't it, is choosing. And you get to choose how much you want to put into each thing. But still, having given up gardening and cooking doesn't seem to have given me much more time for painting. So I think there's a problem that I need to look into.
And I was trying to think sort of what feels impossible in this idea of, like, your reason for doing it. Like, I spent 6 hours yesterday. I didn't get up. I didn't get dressed. I was in bed. And Paul said, "Are you all right?" And I was like, yeah. I'm on my laptop. I'm working out how Mighty Networks works. Oof. And it went from complete frustration, irritation, annoyance. I don't understand why this works. How is it so complicated? What is all this terminology mean? I don't understand it. To, by the end of the day, actually quite excited about it. And the reason that I stuck with it through the irritation phase, through the frustration, is because my reason for doing it is stronger than that now.
Mm.
I really want to create and if it's not, I need to know, even if I make a decision to go back to Facebook for my group, which I don't think is going to happen at this point, that I've really investigated what the other options are. And that's an important part of decisions for me. If I just, like, peek my nose around the corner, have a quick look at Mighty Networks and go, "Oh, this is a bit confusing, I'm out." I haven't answered all my questions about it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm like, there is a reason. I want to make this work. It's got to be good. I want it to be good. It's got to be fun to use. It's got to have advantages. And I will stick through that "this feels impossible" stage in order to get there, because my reason is stronger.
Because you've got a strong reason. Mm. So what are we saying? You need a strong reason.
Mm.
You need a healthy dose of selfishness, to whatever extent you can manage. You need to understand that it's harder than you think it is at the beginning, and that's just normal, and then you've got to push through that.
And I think, how many, you know, if we talk about big rocks projects, how many big rocks are you carrying around in your life at the moment? Because there are times that you need to put things aside. You know, you have taken on too much. You might be excited about something, but now is not the right time.
Yeah, or many things have been thrown at you. And, you know, sometimes you just, life just gets in the way.
Yeah, and being able to do that without that sort of self-criticism, that's the key thing, isn't it? But that's the bit that also takes, you know, it takes a bit of work, doesn't it, doing that?
Yeah.
Hey, but what are you going to be doing otherwise?
Yeah, you've got to have something to spend your time on that's worthwhile. There's no more kings to find. Work, I think the rest of them are accounted for. So if you want to watch that film, everybody, watch The Lost King. It's a really good film. It's produced and written by Steve Coogan, and very well worth watching.
Right. Okay. Other than that, I don't have anything else to recommend. I finally watched Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, was it any good?
It was quite nice. Do you know what? It slightly annoyed me, and I hadn't realised that it was Julia Roberts in the main role, because it really, you were very conscious the whole way through, even though it's based on a true story, the book. It just felt very much like a film rather than a real person doing real things.
Yeah, because it's Julia Roberts. You can't forget it. You can't
get away
from
Julia Roberts. So I just think that was a slightly... I mean, I can see why, perhaps, but it would have been interesting, more interesting, had it not been a super famous person.
Elizabeth Gilbert was flattered, though. Who's going to play you? Oh, Julia Roberts. Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Julia Roberts with perfectly there. I did love a bit where she was supposed to be in a yoga ashram and she had what was obviously perfectly tongued, coiled hair.
Do you know what's really annoying as well? I listened to a podcast with Julia Roberts and someone who knows her. I can't remember what the podcast was. And she's clearly the loveliest woman and the woman who has the most beautiful house that everybody piles to and socializes in. And she's like the mother hen and all the teenagers go to her. I just thought this, the more they talked, I thought she's perfect. Like, she's actually perfect. That's very annoying. It's much nicer to be able to think, oh, yeah, but I bet she's miserable. But no, she's not. She's really happy.
She's perfect. I don't know. Is it easier to be perfect when everything's going your way, though, isn't it? Come on.
It is. I have two things to recommend, but they're both on British TV, I think, only. So I apologise for that. One is called Boat Story.
Mm-hmm.
And these are two amazing women, to go back to amazing women. Daisy Haggard was in Episodes, amazing show. She wrote and produced and starred in Back to Life, which is unbelievable. And now she's in Boat Story, which is one of the weirdest things I've seen. It reminds me of Fargo or some of those weird American things that are really exciting and interesting, but it's excellent. So I recommend that. And Louis Theroux's interview with Joan Collins.
Oh, yes, I've heard that night. Advertised on the radio.
So good. What an amazing woman Joan Collins is. And she's 90 and you would not believe it to look at her. She is amazing. So I really enjoyed that. So that's back to our theme of women who do amazing things in a man's world. Both of
there you go. And talking of believing in impossible, the line that I've heard from that is when she says, oh yeah, I believe in marriage, that's why I've done it 5 times.
Yeah, she did.
That's probably a good note to end on. There you go.
That is a good note to end on. So go be amazing.
Yeah, it's not hope over experience, is it? It's kind of, it's not even hope. Hope feels very laid back, and I'm not laid back in a relaxed way, in a non-participatory way.
Yeah,
it's not hope.
Feels like it's up to other people, whereas it's more seize the day, carpe diem.
Yeah, unless it's one of the days that you've deliberately given yourself a rest off to sit on the sofa and watch Boat Story.
Yeah, unless
which is fine too. So sometimes we can do, so maybe, what's the podcast? Is it the Glenn Doyle podcast? We can do hard things. So maybe we can do hard things. Okay, maybe this should be, we can do impossible things, brackets, but only when you really want to, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go and have lunch.
All right. See you later, everybody.
Bye.
My open tabs are like proof of my, well, I haven't got attention deficit disorder because I've done the test online and I haven't got any of the criteria for it, but whatever it is that my brain is now, scattered. It's
flat.
Oh, I'll check that. Oh,
will I show you my desk at the moment? Ready?
Yeah. That's just creativity.
I don't know why I thought getting post-it notes would be a good idea. No, don't do
eventually
that.
You just peel some off and throw them away and that I way do. Managing them.